Welcome, members and guests, to the November 1st, 2013 meeting of the City Club of Eugene. Welcome to our KLCC listeners and to our TV audiences on community television and the Oregon Wind Network. I'm Marty Wilde, City Club President. Today's sponsors are Network Charter School, a standards-based, hands-on public school for students in grades 7 to 12, Hearing Associates, Drs. Gail Leslie and Sandy Ibarra, KLCC, NPR for Western and Central Oregon, and a special thank you to KPFF Consulting Engineers for our office space. We are a member-supported organization. If you are not already a member, please consider a tax-deductible or virtual City Club membership, sponsorship, or donation. Our program coordinators today are Randy Prince and Laura Potter. Welcome to our new members, David Avelt, Bob Warren, Kevin Matthews, Mike Coles, and Michael Kerrigan. Also to sponsors PacInfo Internet Solutions and Mary Hemsters as a gold-level sponsor. And now I'll invite Tom Adams to come up and introduce our program.
Good afternoon, everyone. Great to be here, and good afternoon to the radio audience listening on KLCC. By way of introduction to our discussion today, this is a City Club debate on a Eugene ballot initiative petition filed this past June by Eugene neighborhood activist Paul Conte. The measure would terminate the city's multiple unit property tax exemption program, otherwise known as MUPTE, and would also prohibit reestablishment of the program without voter approval. Now, the city's MUPTE program is authorized by state legislation that seeks to stimulate the construction of transit-supportive multiple-unit housing in core areas of Oregon's urban centers to improve the balance between the residential and commercial nature of those areas and to ensure full-time use of the areas as places where citizens of the community have an opportunity to live as well as work. You'll be tested on this later. Okay. The Eugene MUPTE program provides a 10-year property tax exemption on qualified improvements, while the land and pre-existing improvements are still taxed during the exemption period. Now, because property taxes are a major operating expense for a development project, the property tax exemption provided by the MUPTE program, supporters say, play a significant role in allowing a project to move forward. The tax exemption is a tool used to offset financial barriers connected with multi-unit housing, barriers such as a higher land cost, higher construction costs resulting from multi-story construction, and higher quality urban design, parking constraints, and too many other factors to list here. Supporters argue MUPTE is intended to support development that would not occur but for the granting of the exemption. The projects are scored on 8 public benefits, according to the city. Those include density, green building features, mixed income, home ownership, accessibility, historic sensitivity, location, and parking. Now, much of this information comes from Oregon Statute ORS 307.600, also a city memo on the MUPTE program. Opponents of MUPTE say the tax breaks have become too generous and that the program is not being used to spur the type of development that Eugenians, for the most part, want. The Eugene City Council has been reviewing MUPTE proposals since, I didn't know it went this far back, 1978, which are considered on a case-by-case basis. Prior to the recent Core Campus and Capstone student housing projects, the City Council had approved 22 projects, resulting in about 750 new multifamily units in the targeted areas. The Capstone and Core Campus projects added another 359 units and 197 units, respectively. Now, after the Core Campus application was received, the City Council suspended the MUPTE program in February of this year for the purposes of reevaluating the program and see if changes should be made. The suspension is in effect until August of 2014. The Council has been holding work sessions in the interim and plans to hold public hearings to gather public comments on whether and how to change the MUPTE program. The proposed ballot measure that we'll be talking about today is separate from the city's ongoing review. If approved by the voters, the measure would terminate the current MUPTI program and would prohibit reestablishment of the program without voter approval. Arguing in favor of that measure is the chief petitioner, Paul Conti, today. Arguing against the measure is Mia Nelson, Willamette Valley advocate for the land use watchdog group 1000 Friends of Oregon. Now, by prearrangement, Paul and Mia have agreed to an opening format for today's debate. They'll have 12 total minutes to state their case. I will try to be the timekeeper. For example, if Paul uses 5 minutes for his opening remarks, he has 7 minutes left in his bank. Or if Mia goes 10 minutes for her open, she only has 2 minutes left in her bank to finish her statement. Once they use up their 12 minutes, I'll have to be the bad guy and cease their presentations for part one. Then we'll break for 5 minutes while the audience will submit your written questions. Make them legible, please. We'll collect the questions and our dynamic duo will debate the questions that all of you supply via the cards. They'll have 90 seconds each to respond to the questions. I'll try to make it an alternating order as much as I can. They've also requested a one-time, one-minute addition to one of their answers. If it's a very complicated question and they're getting up to that 90-second deadline, they're going, I can't finish the answer. They have a one-time, one-minute extension. Okay. Are we ready, participants? Paul Conti is first.
Thank you, Tom. That was really an exceptional introduction to the topic. There's nothing I would quibble with in what Tom did to lay the groundwork. It's a pleasure to be here with you today, and I was particularly pleased that as part of this program we're using a quiz show format, and the winner will walk away with $10,000 funded by the MUPTIs that haven't been given out over the last several months. Let me first set the record straight. I'm not unequivocally opposed to government subsidies, including tax exemptions, when they're based on sound principles and implemented properly. I also want to mention that in the run-up to this program, both Ms. Nelson and Laura Potter insisted that the debate question be limited to the ballot measure's two actions and that discussion should not stray into what elements would be necessary in a new MUPTI program to meet community support. So at least I'll begin by just addressing those two items, although I may stray. One, the ballot measure would revoke the current MUPTI program, but City Council has already suspended it, as you heard, and honestly, there's no chance at all that City Council is going to restore that same program. If they do anything, they will put in place a different program. So that first item really is no big deal. It's already more or less a fait accompli. Two, the ballot measure would require voter approval of any new MUPTI program. Not every MUPTI application, but just the rules that govern the program. Now, whether or not to require voter approval on any tax or revenue measure comes down to two things, significance and trust. The MUPTI program is undeniably significant. It has exempted tens of millions of dollars in city, county, and 4J school district tax revenue. Trust is the issue. I submitted the ballot measure because the evidence over the past several years presents a compelling case that we cannot continue to trust developers, city staff, and the mayor and city council majority to manage MUPTI in a fair way, in a sound fiduciary manner, and in a way that produces benefits for the entire community, not just a few investors. Not all, but numerous developers have padded their projected costs to qualify for MUPTI. City staff have blatantly acted as a promotional agent for the developers and have stooped to providing false and misleading information to the council and the public. And the mayor and council majority have shirked the due diligence they owe voters and have not ensured these enormous tax exemptions serve the broader community's interests. Their actions have harmed public programs and shifted the tax burden to local property owners. I'll elaborate on these on this introduction in my later responses. But now let's hear Ms. Nelson argue against letting the voters and taxpayers have a say. Keep in mind that my agenda is simple. Let the community decide whether what council proposes as a new MUPTI program is responsible and serves the broader community's interests. As you listen to Ms. Nelson, ask yourself, what is her agenda? And why should we be afraid of letting the voters decide? Thank you.
Okay. Paul, that was about 3.5 minutes so far.
Good afternoon to all of you, and thank you, City Club members. I'd also like to clear something up, and that is that Paul is not the only person with 2020 vision in the rearview mirror. I'm also not happy with the old MUPTI program, and actually I don't know anyone who is. I think our collective angst has been largely a reaction to specific outcomes, especially the Capstone and Core Campus student housing developments. But remember that MUPTI is a tool. It is not an outcome. And like any tool, it can be used in a variety of ways. We don't outlaw hammers and backhoes just because we don't like some of the past products of their use, and we shouldn't do that with MUPTI either. We should fix it. Now, Paul's suggestions about how the program should be changed would be useful testimony at a city public hearing on how to reform the MUPTI program. The City Council is well aware changes need to be made. They've been clear on that since February when they suspended the program, and they'll be collecting ideas for reforms. And that is how civic discourse works. Everyone puts their ideas out there, and together we make government better. Government does learn from hindsight. Mistakes are made, and then they're fixed going forward. That said, I also think that that Paul's ideas for how MUPTI should be fixed really are irrelevant to the question at hand, as that is why I did not want to debate them. And the question is not what a MUPTI program should look like. It's should the city be prohibited from having a program at all unless the voters approve it. I hope to prove two things to you today. First, that MUPTI is a very important program, and second, that it's a very complicated program. Not only in the details of its operation, but the complexity of its consequences. Year after year, my husband and I undergo the same voting ritual, sitting at the kitchen table with that voter's guide, studying every ballot measure. And the more there are, the more anxious I get, especially when they're complicated or involve issues that I know little about. I really fear that Trojan horse initiative that turns out to be the opposite of what I thought. Last year, it was Measure 81, the ban on gillnet fishing. I read that measure. I decided to vote for it. It sounded great. But then later, I started hearing that conservation groups were opposed to it. They said it was going to hurt fish, not help them. And I realized, wow, I got fooled again. I almost voted wrong. And when I say wrong, I mean wrong for me, a decision that I wouldn't have made if I had had all the facts. Now, that was a confusing ballot measure, but not nearly as confusing as this MUPTI measure would be. And add to that complexity the fact MUPTI is also extremely vulnerable to being mischaracterized by soundbite sloganeering, such as it's just a giveaway to rich out-of-town developers. And it's already attracted a lot of negative press attention and even criticism from city councilors. Complicated, easily caricatured, public black eye. That is a toxic combination for any ballot measure. In fact, I'm willing to wager that if Paul packaged up all his best ideas and placed his ideal MUPTI on the ballot, it would fail. And it would fail by approximately the same margin as any other variation that one might care to try. Like an Oregon sales tax proposal, the details aren't going to matter. The answer is just going to be no. And that's because the nuances of Paul's proposal, the city council's proposal, any other proposal, they're going to be lost on the average voter the same way the details of that gillnet fishing measure were lost on me. Doesn't make me stupid. Makes me a busy person who just doesn't have the time to fully educate myself on every issue that shows up in my mailbox demanding a vote. And speaking of education, this ballot initiative comes to us without any financial resources to provide voters with objective factual information on the MUPTI program or the consequences of its loss. The city cannot spend public funds on an education effort, so who will? A recent mayor's race cost $900,000, and that was a simpler decision. What's it going to cost to explain this complex program to every voter in the city? And how does it serve the public interest to hold a vote without that explanation? What good is a direct democracy action taken in an information vacuum, or even worse, in a stew of misinformation and inflammatory rhetoric? I think the prospects of a voter-approved MUPTI are so grim that if this initiative becomes law, I would urge the council to not even bother trying to get voter approval. I would just accept the tools gone and move on. And instead, city resources should be put towards cleaning up the mess. And there will be consequences if this tool is lost, which I will talk about in the next round.
Okay. Are these mics on? Okay.
Sounds about 4 3/4 minutes for Mia so far.
I'll be brief because I want to hear the rest of the argument of why democracy doesn't work. Information, Mia said that she wouldn't have voted a certain way if she had had all the information, and this is exactly the point. The staff and the developers have been withholding information from the council and the public, and I'm not going to go through all the details there. It's all in the public record, but if anybody wants to challenge that during the questions, I'll be glad to respond to it. My goal is exactly the opposite, which is let's not give up. Let's demand of our council that they get the information out there and that they hold staff accountable so we know what's really gone on behind the scenes, and then let's let the voters decide.
Back to me already. First, I'll just, I'm a little confused, Paul. Are you saying the voters aren't capable of electing a city council that can craft a good MUPTI ordinance? This council spent dozens and dozens of hours learning about MUPTI, listening to citizen concerns, thinking about what to do, far more time than almost any voter would be willing or able to spend on this. These are the people the voters entrusted to do the heavy lifting on their behalf. If the voters trust their chosen leaders, then why wouldn't they be able to do this job? And if the voters don't trust their leaders, there's a direct, simple solution for that. Now let's dig into the big questions, which is why should anyone care if we have a MUPTI, and what might happen if we lose it? And here are some things I hope you'll consider. First, downtown revitalization. Eugene's downtown is just so important to the prosperity of our entire region, but it has really struggled in the past. It has taken decades of hard work by Eugene's staff and focused public investments to transform the downtown, and it simply would not have happened without market intervention tools like MUPTI. Almost all Eugene's downtown development has needed tax exemption programs like MUPTI, urban renewal money, or other assistance. Many well-loved downtown places were funded by these programs. They would not exist without them, such as the Public Library, Broadway Place, the High Street Terrace, the Tate, the Holt Center, and the LCC campus. And I think this work is paying off. The success of downtown is starting to build on itself. Recently, livability.com selected Eugene's downtown as one of the top 10 in the nation. That is something to be proud of. And just last week, another business announced that it was moving to Eugene, specifically to the downtown. And this is not some kind of random happy accident. This didn't just happen. This was deliberate, and MUPTI helped make this happen. But the work is not finished yet. Looking forward, we have keystone projects like the EWEB Riverfront Redevelopment Plan. It's a community-designed redevelopment. That project is going to need urban renewal funds and possibly MUPTI as well if it's going to become real. So now is not the time to throw away the tools that are working wonders in the downtown. So I'm going to end there, and I hope, Paul, I'm just curious to hear if you're supportive, you know, regardless of what you think of some of the current MUPTI applications, are you supportive of what's been accomplished in the downtown?
Well, first off, the library, the Holt Center, and LCC had nothing to do with MUPTI, and we're not here to debate what how they were funded. So that's just a red herring that's thrown up there. Yes, the downtown has been transformed, and if you walk by Capstone, you'll see what a gross mistake that's been. That's a horrible loss of that wonderful spot that could have been showcased for generations to come. It turns its back on the community. It's ugly. It's cheaply built. It's a warehouse for a transient population. And students, I'm using the word in its normal meaning, transient, as in they don't have a long-term commitment to the neighborhood. They may be fine, but they're not there. That is a horrible transformation with it that generations will pay for decades. So I wouldn't throw that out there as an argument in favor of MUPTI. The other things that were mentioned and those other programs, they're different issues that require some careful consideration. The other thing is nobody's talking about throwing out MUPTI. We're talking about letting the voters become informed and making a decision. And I'm afraid council didn't do their work. Staff told council that if they gave 7 years of MUPTI to Capstone instead of 10, the value of that project would drop $14 million and Capstone would walk away. That was a city staff member. If that staff member was that incompetent, they should have been fired on the spot. That probably was just part of the whole dissembling that's gone on in terms of supporting these programs. So, no, council cannot be trusted with from past experience. Now, council has a very good option. Get wise. Dig in, hold the staff accountable, start looking at other places like what Portland does successfully, and show us something that makes a ballot measure unnecessary. Mia said that if my proposal or the sketch of my proposal were put on the ballot, it would be guaranteed to fail. Nice crystal balling, but at some point maybe we'll be able to talk about it, and some of you might think that it's worthwhile. This really is just an attack on the voters' rightful ability to prevent the kinds of abuses that we have the evidence have been occurring. And if you want to argue against that, then you have to put other evidence out there, and that evidence has to be what council does.
You get by my clock, you've got about five minutes left in your bank.
All right. Another reason I love MUPTI is it creates choices. Because it enables development that would otherwise not occur, MUPTI gives Eugene the choice to accommodate growth on redeveloped commercial land instead of increasing density inside existing neighborhoods. For the last several years, Eugene's been wrestling how to accommodate 34,000 people over the next 20 years. And a major challenge is 6,300 new multifamily units are needed, but there's actually vacant land for less than 40% of those. We're 3,900 units short. Cities typically deal with land shortages by expanding the UGB, by promoting redevelopment and infill, and by upzoning existing vacant areas. But Eugene can't fix this with a UGB expansion at the fringe because all the allowed expansion areas are so far from transit and services, not meet state law requirements to provide appropriate locations for that housing. An expansion would also be fiscally and environmentally irresponsible as well as unpopular. A recent Oregon Values survey found only one quarter of Oregonians think that new development should be allowed to occur outside urban growth boundaries. Now, that leaves redevelopment and upzoning. The current Envision Eugene plan ruled out upzoning because neighborhood leaders did not support any densification in existing residential areas. Instead, the plan is to rely exclusively on redevelopment downtown and in commercial areas along transit corridors. And MUPTI is a cornerstone of that plan. It simply can't work without it. If MUPTI is lost, key choices made by Envision Eugene will also be lost, and I believe Eugene will have no choice eventually other than to significantly increase density inside existing neighborhoods, which is the opposite of what community leaders said they wanted. And so I ask you, Paul, is densification of neighborhoods a consequence you could accept?
Actually, yes. Actually, I wrote the special area zone for Chambers, special area zone and Jefferson West Side area zone, both that allow increases in density in reasonable ways that don't degrade the neighborhood. So I think I've already proven on the ground that that's what I support. This is a false dichotomy that you either have MUPTI or you screw your neighborhoods. You know, look at the student housing bit. 2 years ago, the student housing market was roaring. That was the only place you could get money from the federal agencies. And we were giving away millions of dollars in MUPTI because on the basic argument that if we didn't give it to them, they wouldn't build it. And now, when the market is much worse, We're having people come in from out of state and build huge complexes without MUPTI. So this is really just ridiculous to think that you have to come let every developer that comes begging to pad their profit level have money, or else they'll go away and will end up being, you know, some kind of third class or third world city. If MUPTI is going to be used, it ought to be used, in my opinion, to support what we need more than anything, and that is affordable housing, family-friendly affordable housing, close in our close-in neighborhoods at the right locations. Bonnie Bettman, previous counselor, and I got council to adopt a program called Opportunity Siting, which let neighborhood communities figure out where and how to have that densification. The staff has stiffed the neighborhoods on trying to implement that and instead is trying to ram things down people's throats that do not fit, will not work in the market, and are not going to make this the community we want to live in. And MUPTI is one thing that, if done right, might help what we really need, but we need to check to make sure that it's done right before it goes ahead.
Okay, by my watch, Mia has 3 minutes left. Paul, you've got about 4 minutes left in the bank.
My last reason for you to consider is that despite what you may have heard, MUPTI makes money. I know it's often characterized, sometimes deliberately, as something that costs the city money as a line item in the budget, something that competes with other budget priorities. But properly applied, MUPTI boosts net city revenues because it maximizes taxable value per acre. Unlike some other redevelopment tools, MUPTI does not require the city to pay out money. Instead, it simply requires the city to wait. Developers plant their orchard in previously fallow ground, and the city waits 10 years to start collecting the fruit. And that 10-year delay is enough to prime the pump so that underdeveloped land can start producing taxes instead of just sitting there. Take the Capstone site. Most of that site actually sat vacant for 40 years after the prior use burned, and it generated $5,000 a year in taxes. Capstone immediately started paying $150,000 a year, and now we have the largest construction project in downtown's history, and in 10 years, that property is going to pay $2 million a year in property taxes. Or Core Campus. That is a contaminated brownfield site that sat vacant for 8 years, paying $10,000 a year in taxes. MUPTI enabled a 12-story Class A glass and steel high-rise that's going to generate $600,000 in annual taxes 10 years from now. Compare that to $20,000 a year for a new fast food use, and that is the fate of many nearby parcels. It would take over 50 acres of single-family residential development to equal the tax revenue from that one building. And if that isn't a cash cow, I don't know what is. And you may wonder, why did that project need MUPTI? Because it's a Class A building. Why did Capstone need MUPTI? Because they have 10,000 spaces of structured parking. They're different than most of those other projects. To wrap up, no matter what many of us believe now, I hope we can at least agree that decisions about MUPTI can be made with care, and I think Paul agrees with me on that. There are real consequences if Eugene loses the tool: a diminished downtown, diminished tax revenues, diminished choices about how to accommodate growth. So we ought to be very careful, and instead of throwing this tool away entirely or crippling it with unworkable provisions, I would like us to work together and resolve the problems that currently exist and create a strong and functional new program. Hope I didn't throw away
You're
too
tapped.
Many seconds.
No, you are right on. All right, Mia is tapped out of her time bank. Paul, you've got maybe 3 minutes. Do you have
Can I fill 3 minutes? Probably.
Can you fill? All right.
look, nobody's talking about necessarily throwing away MUPTI. Mia, the council, the Chamber of Commerce, put your best shot out there and see if you can make the case. That's what's required here. There are some really questionable claims that aren't supported by credible evidence in what Mia just said. 10,000 spaces of parking? I don't think so.
Not 1,000, sorry.
And in terms of the net, it doesn't cost us a thing. We provide services to all these buildings for 10 years. That costs us something. Okay, so there is a lot of money actually going out of your coffer into these developments. Furthermore, if you look at the, and I'm surprised Mia didn't have it, the staff's bogus track, you know, catalog of what's happened in the past and all the revenue we've gained, none of that accounts for the fact that a lot of that revenue we wouldn't have deferred for 10 years. Look at the student housing projects that are being built without MUPTI. This stuff is all just a bunch of puffery that's been used in the past and wouldn't withstand any credible investors' examination. That's what we need to change, and then we need to make a decision about it. And I think I'll just stop there. I mean, I think we've kind of exhausted what the real point is. My conclusion is just that put your best shot out there. I've got confidence that y'all here will spread the word, be talking about it. You'll have, I'm sure you want to have both of us back, and we'll make a good decision if that's what if it comes to that. Thank you.
Well, let's take a five-minute break, 5 to 6 minute break, and develop your questions at your tables, on your cards. Please make those legible, and we'll reassemble and go through the Q&A.
You're tuned to KLCC Eugene 89.7 FM, KLCO Newport 90.5, 89.1 KLFR Reedsport, and at 88.1 KLFO Florence, KMPQ Roseburg, and KLBR Bend. We're also on the web at klcc.org.
All right, let's reassemble Eugene City Club for today. A ton of questions. I don't know how many we'll get through here in the time allotted, but let's go ahead and try. Again, the format is 90 seconds per person per answer with a one-time, one-minute extension if they're right in the middle of something and they can't wrap it up. Good. That's we'll do it that way.
And the lifeline.
First question. How would the elimination of MUPTI change the outcome of Envision Eugene? Mia, you want to go first?
Yeah.
How would the elimination of MUPTI change the outcome of the Envision Eugene effort?
So I said earlier that Eugene lacks vacant land for 3,900 multifamily units, and Envision Eugene relies exclusively on redevelopment to provide that capacity. We need MUPTI to do this because there's a major obstacle. Other than close-in student housing, multifamily redevelopment in Eugene is not financially viable without government support. City staff recently reviewed all 5-plus unit projects since 2001. They could not find a single instance of financially independent redevelopment farther than 1/2 mile from campus. Not one. So even if every student housing project that has been announced is eventually built, that's only 2,200 redeveloped units that could be produced over the next 20 years without government support. But we need 3,900 units. And that leaves another 1,700 units that cannot be built without government support. And without MUPTI, the plan just won't work. There's nothing else to take its place. Densification of existing neighborhoods appears to be the only remaining option. One way to address the shortage is upzoning nearly all vacant and oversized residential lots within a quarter mile of major streets in the city. Alternatively, zoning could be kept the same, but achieved density of new multifamily projects would have to increase by 70%. The city council will have to decide ultimately what to do, whether it's either of those or both together.
Okay. Paul?
Can I have about 20 minutes more on that one? You really do need to have some folks back on Envision Eugene. Envision Eugene is something that's a house of cards sitting on a lot of bogus data. It doesn't even take into account what the leakage would be to Junction City, Coburg, and so on. So the problem is that these numbers are treated as if they're real, and they're in fact not real. It may be that it's not possible to hit the mark that came out of a small group without any real public vetting. I can't speak to that. But what I can tell you is the choice is not between destroying neighborhoods and giving away $3.5 million to developers that don't even ask for it. The choice is get smart, get your feet on the ground, find out what really makes development work, and don't do things like the South Willamette study that staff is wasting enormous amounts of time and money on and hasn't even done anything to have a practical, you know, market-based planning process. So the real answer here is let's have council hold the city manager's feet to the fire, have have some accountability, have some competency, and start doing this stuff smart instead of just making it up as you go along. And just giving blanket approval to MUPTI is not going to solve that problem.
All right, second question, more coming in. How would the proposed ballot measure, if passed by the voters, affect the City Council's ongoing MUPTI reform process? Paul, first.
Yeah, I think it would give them a great incentive to actually do it right. In fact, their incentive is to do it right before the measure is actually put on the ballot. And that's, you know, I'm hopeful that that's what they'll do. However, if you look at what has happened, the city manager has come back again, same old story, nothing changed. Council asked him when they extended the suspension to bring in different voices from the community so the community would have a say in this. He didn't do that. He hasn't done that. If he's going to do it, he's going to do it in the next 10 days. As far as I know, nobody in any neighborhoods has been contacted about this. It's business as usual, and unless council takes on the responsibility that we elected them to, then we're going to have to go to the ballot with this.
I don't know how it's going to affect it. I'll tell you my worst fears. Paul and I are both activists, and normally all that activists have is the ability to influence decisions. We don't have real power. Even when we file an appeal, it's not us that has the power, it's the law. And I have a lot of respect for the difference between activists and elected officials, between influence and power. I also respect the difference between persuasion and coercion. And I really worry that this initiative, which is now being held over the heads of city councilors like a cudgel, it's coercive, it's not persuasive. And I worry that Paul's crossed the line from being influential to being controlling. To be blunt, I think that Paul is willing to do something that I'm not. And he's willing to destroy something. I mean, he has a hand grenade and I don't. And so when I step forward with my ideas for how to change MUPTI, are my suggestions going to be taken as seriously as his? Wouldn't the city council rather have Paul's version of a MUPTI than no MUPTI at all? That's my worst fear about this. Not too long ago, I found myself in a similar situation. I could work with Paul to try to convince the city council to move the MX line from 11th and 13th to 6th and 7th, or he would launch a ballot initiative to try to kill the entire project. He sent me that ultimatum, and he sent it to city leadership. He sent it to our U.S. congressional delegation. And the instant that he threatened that bus route, that project, everything changed for me. I stopped thinking about where the best bus route would be, and I started thinking about what do I need to do to make Paul happy so that he doesn't destroy this project. I acted from fear. I did. And I did what I was told to do because I wanted an MX line. And now I regret that decision. I do. I regret asking the city to move that line. I didn't know I was dealing with a repeat customer. I didn't realize that I was going to be back here with the same person and in the same with a different issue. And this isn't how I want important decisions to be made. I don't think that unelected activists like us should have hand grenades. So as much as I want to see MUPTI survive, I hope the city council closes its eyes tight to this whole thing. And I hope that they listen to everyone equally. I hope they make the decision that's best for Eugene, and they let the chips fall where they may. That's what I think.
Okay. All right. Next question. I think this may be directed toward Paul. Exactly what misinformation was provided by city staff to city council and when?
So on May 8th, when council took their final vote on the Capstone project, Denny Breaux of the development staff told council there was no chance that councils hadn't seen this before. He popped this thing up and said, if you give them 7 years instead of 10, they're going to lose $14 million on their value. That was just absolutely false. The internal rate of return that I had submitted to analysis I'd submitted them to them earlier showed that the range was maybe about $2 million, and they would still meet their profit goals. Nan Lawrence told council on the same day that that no lead had been found on the site. That was false. Sitting in a staff member's drawer was a report from an environmental assessment group that had found lead on the site. Stuart Ramsing, the city building official, gave false information to council about the risk of lead hazard, saying that you couldn't get lead dust unless you burned or sanded, and that's not at all true. Anybody knows that. He provided false information about permits that had not been issued, claiming that Capstone had the permits, and they did not. The staff subverted the traffic impact analysis by producing false information about Capstone's phasing, claiming that it was not a two-phase project. We'll go out there and look on the ground. I could go on.
Mia, did you want to respond or pass?
You know, I'll just respond to say I don't have any information about the topics Paul brought up, but I can give you some perspective. I work all over the Willamette Valley with local governments and staff, and I find Eugene's staff to be excellent. I find them to be professional. I reject the idea that they are lying and that there is some kind of deliberate effort to mislead. I can accept, and I think it's quite common, that people make mistakes, and that's a really different thing. And I think this accusation of impropriety that keeps being thrown out is not constructive. I don't see anyone on city staff that is dishonest at all. And I reject that, and I hope you do too.
All right, next question for both. How do we get away from the but-for metric for deciding tax breaks? In other words, if we don't support it, it won't get built. Mia, first crack at that? Shall I repeat the question?
I'm not sure I understand. Is the question asking how should we revise it so that you don't make that decision?
Not sure.
What does that mean?
How do we get away from the but-for?
Let me start off.
Yeah, let Paul answer.
People may not be aware that the current MUPTE ordinance says that you can't get the tax exemption unless your project couldn't be built but for getting that tax exemption. And so that's what the but-for shorthand is. This is the stupidest criteria in the world, because what happens, and you can see it if you go look at the applications, is the developers just lard their project, so they run their project costs up with amenities, and then they come in and go, gee, we can't get profit. So they get the MUPTE, and then they go back and they have a better product than the other people on the market. So it's picking winners and losers and giving the people you pick as winners, you know, a whole bunch of free money. So that is the wrong way to do it. The way Portland does it is they have a once a year competitive everybody sends their applications in at the same time, and then they're rated competitively. And they also have to put in provisions for a large amount of subsidized or below market rate affordable housing. If you want to see how to do a pretty good project, just look at Portland. They have it run right there in their second generation. It's quite successful. Portland is different than Eugene. But really, that's where things are. The other thing I want to come back to is this idea that somebody's holding a gun to their head. You know, we need to stand up when we see things being done wrong, and that's what I'm doing. And if Mia doesn't like somebody standing up and calling it when they see it and when they've got the evidence to back it up, I'm not sweating it.
Okay, I understand the question now. I will agree with Paul about this issue that there should be some controls on what can be included in a project. And I will say with the Capstone development, I and many others did not like that there is 1,000 units, not 10,000, 1,000 parking units, structured parking as part of that project. And I remember asking why. It's almost one space per bedroom. And this is in an area where parking is not required at all. Structured parking costs $20,000 a space. You know, that parking garage probably cost them almost $20 million to build. And I asked, why are we doing this? They wouldn't need a tax exemption if they didn't have such a huge parking structure. And I remember being told they needed that to get their financing, which I believe was true. But I was quite surprised when Core Campus came along shortly thereafter with a plan to do much more luxurious housing and a quarter as much parking per bed. And so I think that does need to be looked at. What are the amenities that can be included in a project when you're doing this but-for calculation? I will also just throw in, as far as low-income housing goes, Eugene has a program that is a 20-year tax exemption for affordable housing, and they have to do either that one or MUPTE. So I just don't understand why MUPTE would be the best choice if you were going to pursue affordable housing. I'm out of time.
Okay. Next question. Specifically, where are the low-income development sites in existing neighborhoods suggested by Mr. Conti? Paul.
Right. Do you mean the ones that, if you don't mind getting a clarification, not clocking against my time? I'm not. I think what I was saying is that they can, that we are interested in getting those, and I can point you to that. But if you're asking where they are, I can also point you to that. So could you get the questioner to?
That's all. Can the table clarify?
Okay, so you want to know where the ones are. So there's one out Fox Hollow that Metro Housing did. There's one on 8th that Metro Housing did. There's another one out in Bethel or Danabo?
The Futures. Mm-hmm.
The Futures, okay, great.
Future sites.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and that's, but the question wasn't future sites. So, and they said that English was plain in that question. The future site, the very best one that I can tell you about is one that I wrote the proposal for, and it was approved unanimously by the JWN board to support family-friendly, multi-generational, partially or fully subsidized housing on the old Naval Armory site on 13, between 13th and 14th north of Cesar Chavez. And we have had that proposal out now for over a year. Staff has stiffed us on that, is moving ahead in violation of our refinement plan with their attempt to just strictly redesignate it as medium-density residential, R2, and then sell it. Now, they might sell it for affordable housing, but we can do better. We can get higher density. We can get better quality. I've already met and gone over the site extensively with Richard Herman, who's the director of Metro Housing. I've got close contacts with St. Vincent de Paul. This is a perfect example in which we have staff that is thwarting intelligent ways to really get on the ground and figure out what's going on and make things happen. We can make this one happen.
Okay. Mia?
I don't dispute that there are probably some good opportunity sites up there, like the one Paul suggested. The problem is the magnitude of this issue that we have to solve is way bigger than that. Just yesterday, I was in a meeting with city staff and other citizens that are working on Envision Eugene technical information, and the staff had just completed an inventory of, they inventoried every single vacant and partially vacant residential lot within a quarter mile of every major street in town, and it was only about like 180 acres of land. That's about how much we're going to need if we don't do redevelopment with MUPTI. That is a huge amount of land. And so I hope that everyone just pictures in their mind coming up with 170 acres of close-in vacant land in Eugene. And I'm telling you, we scoured the city, and it's just not there. That's why redevelopment is the best choice. It's really the only choice right now, but it doesn't pencil, and we need MUPTI to do that.
Okay. All right. Here's a zinger. Can't we extrapolate from the data, since MUPTI has been suspended for now, if this is a necessary program or not? Mia?
I am not sure they mean the student housing projects that have...
No, MUPTI overall. Can't we extrapolate from the data, since MUPTI has been suspended, if this is a necessary program for Eugene or not?
I'm still not sure I understand, but I'm just going to talk anyway.
Okay.
The study that I mentioned that Eugene's staff did, they took every single multifamily project that's come into the city since 2001, it's five units and more, and they looked at it. Is it a greenfield site? Is it a redevelopment site? And if it's a redevelopment site, did it have some kind of public assistance? And they didn't find a single one that was redevelopment that didn't have public assistance if it wasn't within a half a mile of campus. I think it's indisputable that student housing generally pencils without MUPTI, at least recently. The rents are so much higher that it just works. And as I said, Capstone, they caused their cost problem by building a huge amount of parking. Core campus is expensive because it's a totally different kind of construction. It's Class A building. All the other student housing, I think we all agree at this point, it doesn't need MUPTI, but everything else does. And I don't think we want to be a city that has nothing but student housing for our multifamily development. So I don't know if I answered the question, but.
Well, if What we would need to look at is to see what the situation was where Mupti actually caused something to be built. I can tell you that the city hired development consultant who works, you know, in the commercial field, not a planner, and they assessed the site, the prior Naval Reserve site, and one of the things they said was that that site can't work at market rates, and so you could make that as an argument that you need Mupti to make that work. But what they really were making the argument of is that you need to get on the ground and figure out how you can make these kind of projects work. And what the problem was not the cost of doing development. The problem was that they couldn't build something that would get the rents because there were not sufficient amenities and quality of the area around that site. So let's think about that a little bit. There's, you know, this is something in which, you know, if, again, using the example of the South Willamette study, you know, yeah, there's South Willamette's got huge potential. So does Blair Street have a huge potential. But we need people to get on the ground that are actually looking at what really works and how good developers actually make things happen. And it may be that there is some purpose for incentives. So let's put in place a program that really puts the money where we need it, where we get the leverage, and where we treat we have benefits for the entire community.
This next question may tie in, hopefully, here. If overestimating construction costs is a problem, why not just add a second look provision at the end of construction when the costs are more clear? In other words, given an initial approval conditioned on the projected costs for fulfilling within a certain range of projections. The whole overestimating value question. Paul?
First off, that's exactly what Portland does. They have what they call a clawback or extended subsidy program. You get the end of 10 years. They have to turn in, the developers have to turn in really good, thorough, transparent accounting data every year. And then at the end of 10 years, if they have made profits in excess of Portland's threshold, which is 10%, internal rate of return, a real number, not the numbers Eugene uses, then they either have to pay back that excess or they have to extend their subsidized housing for a certain number of years forward. So, yeah, that's exactly what we ought to do. And I want to use that to segue into, I have a product here for you. I've actually gone to the trouble to put together a comprehensive proposal for recommendations. And when Mia said, well, you know, I want to hold the gun to their head so that my proposal gets in there, I don't care. You know, I mean, what I care, but I don't care if the people get, if the community says we want to give away a bunch of money to out-of-state developers for some purpose other than affordable housing, I'm okay with that. What I don't want to see is I don't want to see the way that the current city manager and the staff are holding this thing away from the public, not being honest with the figures, and council not holding them accountable. I want this to be clear what the public wants to do. I put this out there to show that there is a constructive proposal. And in this, it has the clawback provision.
Okay, Mia?
I agree with Paul. I don't know why there isn't some follow-up financial reporting, because it actually undermines the credibility of the program, because people always can ask that question, well, I wonder what really happened. I wonder whether they really needed this or not. And I know of at least one developer that used Mupti who would be delighted to share his figures because it turned out worse than he thought, and he would have needed a lot more than 10 years. And so I don't think that's something for developers to be afraid of. I don't think you can ask them for their tax returns, but they should be able to, at minimum, report the same information that they used in their estimates up front. I think if we did that, it would help a lot. I also think it would help if there was some more rigorous upfront review when developers do come forward with their pro formas, someone, a third-party review maybe, if there's trust in what we're being told, that will help the program, not hurt the program. So I would like things to get much more clear. I also think that could dovetail nicely with some parameters about what can go into a project, like a cap on parking, for example.
Okay. Got about five more minutes for Q&A. Question for Paul. Recognizing the complexity of this issue, why would a developer opt to use Mupti for affordable housing when an existing tool offers double the time exemption? Would one tool preclude the use of the other?
I don't have a settled answer on that because I'm not as up to speed about the affordable housing exemptions as I am on the Mupti. What I would say is, just to reiterate, that I don't have an overall, complete objection to using tax exemptions, and the requirements for the projects would certainly be different. In the case of what we were talking about trying to make happen over at the old Naval Reserve site, that might be divided into two projects. It might be a market rate project and, on one site, but there may be a market rate project and a subsidized project. And so I just have to repeat over and over again, I don't see the problem here. Council can do a good job and get it, out to the public and inform the public, and they can get the support. If in this context, to not be willing to put it to the voters, that is going to cripple the project from the beginning, because people are going to wonder, why are you afraid to put it out to the voters?
Okay, Mia.
MUPTI, many people maybe don't know this. I certainly didn't before I researched it, but there are over 100 different property tax exemption programs in Oregon, and MUPTI is just one of those. And there are a number of them that are crafted to help low-income housing. And the one I'm thinking of is called the LURPTI, not the MUPTI. I think it's low-income rental property tax exemption. That is a 20-year, and my understanding is it's either or. You can either do MUPTI or that one. MUPTI is really not, in statute, it's envisioned as a tool for market rate housing. It can be used for affordable housing, but primarily it's for market rate housing that is supportive of transit and redevelopment in the core. So I don't think that that it is the most powerful tool by far to use for low-income housing, and I have been confused about this for quite some time, why anyone would argue that that's how, that MUPTI should be retooled to do that when we have better tools, and we don't have any tool other than MUPTI available to nourish our downtown and our transit corridors.
I may have time for maybe two more questions. Let's try. Assuming we keep MUPTI responsibility with the city council and staff, how do we get them to insist on better quality design and community design in return for city investment?
Huh. Good,
Mia.
Good one. I have been pretty upset to realize that the Capstone project does not look like the project that is illustrated in the application. I think the solution there is there should be some upfront design standards. The hoops should be set up for the developer so they know what to expect coming in. Instead of now, it's just sort of this blank canvas and there's no guidance for what they should propose. And then I think there should be some binding architectural standards. Really, I think that what we have seen this lately has been a wake-up call to show that if something really matters, it should be written down. And one of the things that I think is, if we asked everyone in Eugene and the city council, like, what is the purpose of MUPTI? I think you would get a lot of variation in the answer. I don't think that we have a coherent idea of why we do this and what we're trying to accomplish. So I think that should be, we need a lot more clarity and focus, and it should be all in writing next time.
Okay, Paul?
I'm going to take my extra minute. So let me start by saying, by reading you what is in the suggestions I provided to council, which is purpose of the MUPTI program: to promote housing and supporting commercial uses that, one, is affordable, two, is family friendly, three, is compatible with surrounding uses, four, is supported by commercial uses, five, is served by transit, six, contributes to the livability, stability, and vitality of the surrounding neighborhoods, seven, supports the local workforce, eight, does not significantly disadvantage local owners and investors of existing or new non-MUPTI residential developments. These are not radical, right? Portland, one of the reasons that Portland uses their MUPTI program is not at all, and it is explicitly not directed at redevelopment. It's directed at providing affordable housing. And one of the reasons for that is that they can use it not just for rental but for ownership, and also they only require 20% of the units to be below market. So that's something that won't meet the threshold of some subsidized projects, which are all 100% subsidized. So there's a role for MUPTI, and Portland's proved it. I mean, you don't have to conjecture that, they've proved it. The other thing I want to point out is that when you talk about design, there's architectural design. There's also something, have any of you heard of the Metro Plan? Okay, so the state statute says that before the city council can approve a MUPTI, they must adopt findings that the project is in conformance with all local plan provisions. And do you know what our city staff and our city attorney told council? Well, you can get around that with some little tricks here that I'll show you how to do. And so Mike Clark, who's, you know, conservative kind of guy and sometimes has trouble with our metro plan. I like Mike. He's a good friend. But he said, well, why would we want to do that? Why don't we just avoid these things so we won't have to worry about appeals and stuff like that? And so the city attorney said, well, you know, land use law is like, it's not real clear and it's kind of sticky and anybody can appeal. It doesn't cost them a lot to appeal. And, you know, we really want to avoid that. So if we are going to have a city manager, city development folks, and a city attorney, they're giving the kind of advice and stuff that I've told you to council, then we're going to need to have this brought to the voters. That's the bottom line. We need to see a change in the way this is being handled. And if we do, then maybe we can get a good project, a good program out of it.
Thanks. Okay, with that, great discussion. Thank you. Thanks to both of you, Paul Conte, Mia Nelson. Thanks so much for inviting me to take part today. Marty has some closing announcements.
Thank you to our speakers and to Tom for moderating today. And thank you for bringing clarity and vision to this City Club discussion of the unsettled future of Eugene's multiple unit property tax exemption. Next, we meet here on November 8th for GMOs, state or local control. So please join us. Thank you very much.